new CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined by Ryan Abraham and Shotgun Spratling. We have a full show for you guys today. We're going to be breaking down USC's 2021 spring game. We saw four quarters of play in the Coliseum, USC playing in front of fans, USC fans in California for the first time since 2019, so it was a big day for the Trojans. So we'll break down our takeaways from that day. Should we be concerned if you're a USC fan about USC's offensive line? Not sure about that. We'll give some injury updates. We'll talk about some newcomers. We saw Keonta Ingram have a nice little run there, so we'll talk about that. And of course, any questions you have, we are live on all three platforms, I believe, Facebook, YouTube, and whatever Twitter is right now.
Twitter Live,
Periscope's cousin, I don't know. We're live, so be sure to put your comments, questions, concerns. We love hearing from you guys. And also, if you want to call us, 512-4-TUNNEL, you can call us and we'll screen your call. We love hearing from you guys. Also, tweet at us. If you put the hashtag TunnelVision, I can put your tweet up on the screen.
Yeah.
But
the hashtag TunnelVision, don't put like at Keely is my name. Don't do any of the ads, because it would just do hashtag TunnelVision and your question. It'll be a lot easier to show on the screen.
It'll be.
I know it's weird. Sorry. It's just clunky, but.
It's clunky, but that's how the system works.
Yeah.
So, excited to talk about the show, but we have to get to some news first before we do so. Some tragic news out of USC today. Former offensive lineman Chris Brown passed away too soon. He was a part of USC's 2016 Rose Bowl team. He started all 14 games in the 2017 that went to the Pac-12 championship game. We heard from head coach Clay Helton. He tweeted today sending his condolences to the Brown family, but he passed away too young. And we all got to know him. He was a great guy. And if you haven't already, look at the quote tweets on Clay Helton's tweet, because you can tell he touched a lot of people's lives. So just a sad thing out of USC and another offensive lineman. They also lost Max Turk earlier this year. So just some sad news for the Trojan family today.
Yeah, it was about a year ago with Max Turk, too. And when I saw the Chris Brown thing, I was like, the Max Turk stuff coming to my head, like, wait, is this, oh my God, this is another, you know, former USC offensive lineman from, you know, very recent past that passed away. He was great to talk to when we were at practice. He had that kind of music career that he would talk to when you would interview him about other things, and just, you know, was as steady. Like, when you just looked at him, he was like an offensive lineman. He was just like some dude that did his job all the time, was steady.
Underrated in that sense.
Very underrated. Yeah. And man, don't know what happened. It's obviously 24 years old, way too young. Our condolences to the family, and just someone from the Trojan family would definitely be missed.
Yep. Alrighty, let's hard transition, but we got to do it anyway. Transitioning into USC's 2021 spring game. Guys, I know we said we would kind of go back and revisit whether or not it was going to be a showcase or a spring game. I think we can officially call it a spring game. We saw four quarters, there are refs, there's tackling. I guess, Ryan, I haven't picked your brain yet, so let's start with you. What were your overall thoughts from the day?
Yeah, it was a spring game. A little, you know, different, where we saw, you're looking at, oh, who's the starting offensive line? Like, oh, Jalen McKenzie got demoted to the second string. Well, no, wait. It was a complete draft of all of the players. So that was kind of a neat wrinkle, where you have Todd Orlando on one side, Graham Harrell on another, Seth Diggy and Mike Jenks, you know, running the offenses and calling the plays. So you had like the two head coaches that were coordinators, and Clay Helton sort of overseeing everything. You know, there's some give and take by having the teams be drafted. You didn't really get to see the full offensive line, whatever the first string offensive line was, the same one we've been seeing the last couple weeks, play together. So I think there was definitely some issues with the offensive line. A lot of sacks given up, these virtual sacks. You know, there were some of those plays that either, you know, any of the quarterbacks probably could have got out of some of those. But basically, if someone kind of came by you, you were sacked. And you would hear the, you know, Vic Soto, if it was his team, you know, sack, sack, and all that stuff. But there was a lot of sacks. I mean, there was one series, you know, poor Miller Moss, he gets back there, you know, sack, tries to run the football, goes nowhere. He doesn't even, like, he gets a snap and he's sacked, like, almost instantly. You're like, yep, that wasn't much of a series. So those were some issues, but we did see some really cool performances. You know, like a guy like Jackson Dart, I thought, you know, made the most of his opportunities and played well. You know, you Drake London's, if you're a Drake, you're a stud. Drake London, stud. Drake Jackson, stud, you know. But we got to see, like, a Dorian Hewett come back and make a really nice play on a ball. That interception was pretty cool. Chris Steele talked about picking off some passes when we got to hear from him. I think it was earlier last week, and he did that. He picked off a pass, so that was cool. Funny moment, Spencer Gilbert, you know, walk on, linebacker, his mom's the track coach. He came in and, like, I think making a tackle or something, and we could hear from the press box there was, like, a Spencer Gilbert, we love Spencer or something like that. I forget what the cheer was, but it was something, like, cool for. And then he ends up intercepting a pass, like, on the very next play, so they sort of called it out. It did look like 5,000 people were there. I don't know how many people were there, but it was pretty sparse. Only on the press box side, there were fans. But it was cool to see fans. I walked around the boxes earlier. There were, you know, people in their luxury boxes. Normally they can hold 30. They only let 10 people in there. But, you know, it seemed like the fans had a good time. It was definitely fun for us. We could film the whole thing. Make sure you check out Keeley's video, the highlight video. And Shotgun got a bunch of good photos from the sidelines and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I thought this was much better. I had a much better feeling coming out of this spring game than the showcase from 2019 or some of those other ones. Just like, it just seemed like kind of a waste. I don't feel like this one was a waste. It's a little weird. You still got 2 weeks of practices to go, but overall I give it high marks. I like the way they ran it. And I think they could have been doing it this way for the last several years, but kudos. Glad they kind of switched and did something that felt more like a game.
Shotgun, your thoughts?
Well, first I want to hear Ryan's thoughts. One thing you didn't really touch on was the drafting overall. What did you make of the drafting? Did you like that because it mixes and matches and, you know, creates that competition? Or do you dislike it because now you don't have some of those units working together and maybe that's something you do want?
I think when you get down to the new, like, you're drafting individual players, I think you could have put some groups out there. Like, I want to draft the first team offensive line or the whatever. Like, that might have been a cool, you know, like, you get the first offensive line together and the second offensive line together. Like, that's a unit that you would draft. Doing the individual people, it just seemed like, you know, did it hurt the defensive lineman? I don't think so. I mean, you see Tuli Tuipulotu or Jay Toy. You know, those guys were in there. Drake Jackson was, you know, making all kinds of plays. It didn't seem to affect those guys as much. But when you have to have this unit play together, I think the offensive line, it was maybe that was a mistake to split those guys up. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, that's the one position group where you really want them to work together. But they did talk about how they're going to mix and match with the offensive line. We've been wondering when that's going to happen. And, you know, we got a true mix and match in this game. So that was kind of that was probably the most interesting thing for me is the decision to go with the drafting and to do it all the way through, not just with, not just with certain positions or, you know, they put that offensive line. And I think there's actually something that came out of it. Now, I didn't notice this at first, but having rewatched it, and I haven't fully rewatched the entire thing that was broadcast on the Pac-12 networks, but watched the first half and watched it pretty intently, they may have found their left tackle. And that may be Andrew Voorhees. Andrew Voorhees looked really good at left tackle in that game. I know the offensive line as a whole didn't look good because some of those younger guys were the ones that were getting beat, and they were getting beat over and over again. That's actually what it was when I go back and watched it. The older guys, for the most part, were doing their part. Did some nice, you know, with Voorhees working beside. I'm trying to remember who he was working beside as a guard. But, you know, he was in there at left tackle. And on the other side, you had Liam Jimmins and Jalen McKenzie were working together with one line unit together. So, you know, some of those groups were, I think the pairings were a little bit closer together. You know, they tried to put McKenzie and Jimmins together on one side. They put Voorhees, and I'm trying to, for some reason, I'm blanking on it. Maybe it was Dedich that was in there at guard beside him.
I think he was, yeah.
But, you know, that they had those kind of pairings together because those are the guys you got to communicate with the most is the guy right beside you. So, you know, I think that maybe he's a guy they take an official look at now because Clay Helton before the spring said that, you know, he gave a list of four names and Andrew Voorhees was not one of those names. Yeah. You know, he mentioned Jonah Monheim, who played right tackle. He had an up and down day. He mentioned Jalen McKenzie, who we have not seen play any left tackle yet. He's been, you know, at right tackle the entire time. And then he mentioned the two guys that have played left tackle, Cortland Ford and Casey Collier. And with Collier not there yesterday, Voorhees gets that opportunity as a left tackle and it looked pretty good in my opinion. Now, there's a couple of things where he would have to improve on, you know, just as far as anchoring and not getting pushed back as much, but keeping his man in front of him, switching on some of the stunts and stuff, he looked really good at that. And he has played some left tackle, some right tackle before in his USC career at practice and a little bit in the games, I believe, at right tackle as a freshman. So maybe that's something they explore, just something that kind of happened out of the mix and match that they had, and because Casey Collier wasn't there, but maybe he took advantage of it enough to be able to play up there. So the rest of the offensive line, a lot of times, like I said, it was the younger guys that were getting beat. You know, the guys that were playing with those starters, but in the other spot. So your Gino Quinones, your Jason Rodriguez getting that opportunity to step up, and you know, those were the guys that were getting beat for some of those tackles for loss and some of those sacks as well.
Interesting. And maybe that's the benefit of having kind of a unique format, as you suddenly say, hey, maybe Andrew Voorhees could be left tackle. I mean, if that's the case, let's just play it out. I know you don't like hypothetical shotgun. Do you then move Dedich into Andrew Voorhees' open guard spot?
I think then the competition becomes less about the left tackle if you know, and he would still have to prove it. It's more than one day, but
sure.
You know, if he proves himself these last couple weeks, they say, let's give this a try for a couple weeks and see where we're at. And they make that decision coming out of spring. I think that opens up the competition for that other guard spot. And now, you know, Cortland Ford, Casey Collier, are they going to, can you slide them inside, or do you need to, you know, do they put pressure on Jalen McKenzie on the other side along with Jonah Monheim?
That's a good point.
Is a guy like, you know, Liam Douglas, we haven't seen him out there because he's been injured. Can he get in that competition? I think it opens up the competition more. I think there's a wider breadth of competition at the guard spot than there would be at the tackle spot. Because the tackle, you know, there's certain skill sets that you really need to have, and you really want that length, that athleticism, and the guard spot, you can do it a little bit differently. I think there's more options there for that.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to be able to watch the film from this, and, you know, maybe we can get some reaction from some of the coaches who we get to talk to this week, you know, after you'll be in the Zooms on the days of practice before, you know, we go to campus. But I do feel like Monheim was someone that was putting some pressure on Jalen McKenzie. The Andrew Voorhees thing could, you know, upset this complete apple cart. But I, you know, if they like what they're seeing at left tackle, they've talked about mixing and matching. We hadn't seen it yet. This might be the catalyst to do that. Now you got 2 weeks of, hey, we got to see Cortland Ford for 8 practices or whatever, or 9 practices playing left tackle. Let's see what, you know, maybe we do 3 with Andrew Voorhees. Maybe we do 3 with Casey Collier when he comes back. So that'll be interesting to see where they needed someone at left tackle because Collier was gone. They put Voorhees out there and like, oh, wait, maybe he could be the guy. And that would be a, you know, a second year in a row where you're moving an interior guy out to the left tackle. Obviously, it worked with Elijah Vera Tucker. You didn't think he had any more kind of, you
pieces.
Know, pieces to put out there. But maybe he is that piece.
Yeah, maybe. Well, something to watch for when we go to practice on Tuesday, see if they play Andrew Voorhees there. But let's talk about the quarterback play. Shotgun, I know you and I deemed it as an up-and-down day for USC's quarterbacks. Ryan, I wanted your thoughts. What did you think about that?
Yeah, the Rain of Troy folks said it was a pretty hard day to kind of evaluate the quarterbacks because there was a lot of pressure. And I tend to agree with that. I mean, we saw the way they split it up was you had Keaton Slovis and Jackson Dart on one side, and then you had Mo Hassan and Miller Moss on the other. Mo Hassan ends up throwing the first touchdown pass. He had that little dump off or whatever to Keontae Ingram. It goes for like 49 yards. Then he finds Brew McCoy. Really nice play there for a touchdown. He has a 9-yard run, and I think that was the one where he sort of came up lame a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you know, apparently a knee injury at an MRI last night. I don't know. We haven't heard the results of that yet, but hopefully, you know, he can have a speedy recovery. I know he's posted some stuff on social media, but, you know, don't know what the outcome of that MRI was at this point. But that left Miller Moss, the true freshman, sort of like, okay, I think there was one series on each side where a walk-on got a series. Neither one of those worked. And then, you know, Miller Moss started off pretty good, moved the ball a little bit. And then, you know, he ends up throwing that interception. And just after that, they did that side of the ball just couldn't get, I don't remember which team it was, Gold or Cardinal, whatever it was. No one was wearing Cardinal. Like the colors didn't make any sense because everyone, you know, the the defense was in white and the offense was still in Cardinal. I don't know why they just didn't give them all different uniforms, whatever. But that's it would be nice to see they're on this team, they're on that team.
Sure.
But for, you know, for Miller Moss, it just didn't feel like he had much of a shot. Like I mentioned that series, he got sacked a couple times.
Yeah.
I think Jackson Dart had some, you know, probably the biggest swings. You know, there was like, oh, that's a terrible interception. But, man, that's an amazing pass. And you could see some of his athleticism when he was running out of the pocket and stuff. So you can see the upside there. When we came into this, we're like, who's going to be like a fan favorite coming out of this? And I think Dart has sort of secured that spot. I mean, he played pretty well, did some great things. But I felt like he was on the more stable side of the ball, you know, having a Drake London to throw to where you didn't, you sure. know, Michael Jackson was, he was amazing too. You didn't really have that on the Miller Moss side. And Keely mentioned this before the show. Once Mo Hassan goes down, Moss was basically the guy running that whole side yeah. of the ball. And it's one of those things where you just need like a break, like, okay, I need to take a series off. And he never really had that opportunity. And, you know, Keaton Slovis threw that pick to, it was a, you know, underthrown ball. Dorian Hewitt made a really nice play on that one, trying to go to London. But, you know, anytime you're able to throw the ball to Drake London, like, I think all the three of us could look okay at times, like, throwing to him. So it was, yeah, I think it was up and down. I don't know if you want to, like, have huge takeaways away with the way the quarterbacks played. But, you know, overall, you saw some good signs from all of them, I think.
Yeah. Also, when I was going through my footage, there were like a couple series where Miller Moss was hitting guys on the numbers, but they just weren't catching the ball. So obviously, that's not going to look great for him. But
it was it was sort of skewed a little, which I feel bad because then people are like, oh, Jackson Dart's the best. You're like, oh, he might be, but, you know. You're kind of discounting.
But I warned you this would happen, right?
Yes,
I knew something would happen where people see one play, one spring game thing, and then suddenly it's the guy.
He did have a couple darts. How are you going to describe that pass? That was a dart. Like, he put it in a freaking postage stamp, you know, right to I think the first one was Drake London, and then, you know, the fade to Michael Jackson for the touchdown was nice, too.
Yeah. Shotgun, I know you're waiting with thoughts.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that both of the young quarterbacks played with a lot of confidence early, and I think Miller Moss's confidence got kind of beat down. One, because the pressure was constant, and it wasn't early, and that's when he was throwing the ball a little bit better. And he made a mistake on the interception, throwing it out there. I think Keely heard Mike Jinks yelling at him when he came off the field.
Yes.
Because it was a run play, basically, the other side, and then all you have, basically, is a one-on-one with Brew McCoy. And he and McCoy weren't on the same page. So he was looking and saw there was pressure, immediate pressure coming off the edge. He was going to throw it out there, McCoy one-on-one. McCoy's trying to set up Chris Steele a little bit more, and Steele just reads the ball and goes and makes a play. So they weren't on the same page, and that's what you're going to get with guys that have been practicing together for 3 weeks. And actually, not even that, because Brew McCoy, that was his first padded practice. So, you know, for a couple of practices so far, he's been working with Brew McCoy. That's kind of the miscommunication you get. DB reads it well, goes and makes a play. Miller Moss later, the fumble, you know, miscommunication or whatever it may be, have been with Keontae Ingram, fumbles that one. So a couple turnovers where new guys getting to know new guys, and there's some issues with the communication, with the, you know, with knowing what exactly you're doing. I think it hurt his confidence a little bit. And then the pressure was just overwhelming kind of after that. You know, the first couple drives, he did all right as far as having some time to throw. The rest of the time, it seemed like people were on top of him almost the entire time. And that probably, you know, that starts when you have a couple turnovers. Okay, you want to think things through a little bit more, make sure that you're not creating a third turnover, you know, and so things move a little bit slower. And it's a big learning experience. You know, Clay Helton said this was a developmental day for everyone all the way around, with the coaches getting the opportunity to, you know, the coordinators being getting an opportunity to be the head coaches, with some of the position coaches getting the chance to call plays. So, yes, it was. And if they did it the right way, then those guys should come away with that, should be a developmental day. This is something with some of the elite college baseball coaches, they'll do in the fall for their spring games, their spring World Series, or whatever. They'll say, hey, assistant coach one, you get this team. Assistant coach two, I want to see what you guys can do. So I think it's an opportunity for those coaches to showcase their stuff and to learn a little bit, because if Graham Harrell or Todd Orlando does get a head coach job, okay, well, now you got a little bit of experience. You know, even if it's one little tiny game, you know, that little bit of experience does help a little bit. So I think it's developmental for them, but also those young quarterbacks in particular. This is something they're going back, and I'm sure Miller Moss, he's a cerebral guy. He loves watching tape. He's going to be picking through this tape for a couple weeks, you know, going over things that he did right, things he did wrong, and figuring out what he needs to do. Same thing with Jackson Dart. I mean, he made a couple really nice plays. He made a terrible throw on the interception, just, you know, never saw the defender right in front. front of him basically was overlooking it. So, you know, and a lot of it goes back to pressure. Both those guys, Dart did a good job rolling out of the pocket. Moss did the same thing a couple times. Keaton Slovis did a nice job getting out of the side of the pocket a couple of times. But there was constant pressure for the most part. And when they didn't have pressure, the offense looked really good. You know, when there was a solid pocket, the quarterback seemed to throw and be able to connect with receivers pretty consistently when there wasn't. And that's going to be the big question for them all season, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also worth noting that this game was broadcasted live on the Pac-12 network. So it wasn't like USC was going to just unleash all of its offensive playbook. And I know some fans came away being like, that's it. That's the offense. Like there, it's not everything for sure. But as far as the defense goes, Clay Helton was very complimentary of the linebacker play, but also the defensive line, like you said, Chuckan, they were in quarterback's faces a lot.
Yeah, they were all over the place, and there were multiple guys. Thought Jay Toya had a monster day. Drake Jackson did a really good job coming off the edge as well. Jacob Lichtenstein got in the backfield. I mean, a lot of those guys were making different guys making different plays at different times. So they were a constant threat for the offense. So I thought the defense line played well. I thought when they ran the ball outside of short yardage situations, the offensive line created some holes as well. Yep. Now, they get away with some holds a couple times. So, you know, with more referees in an official game, maybe some of those are called. One Stephen Carr running gets outside. There was a blatant hold that was not called. But that's going to happen in games, too. So I thought the offensive line opened up some holes for the running backs. And the running backs had, you know, as far as their yards per carry, were pretty solid across the board. Stephen Carr, I think Stephen Carr was at like 5.7 or so. Matt Colombo, the walk-on, was up there as well. So, you know, they had some decent numbers on the ground. They had a couple of explosive plays and the big explosive play thrown to Keontae Ingram. But as far as the offensive line blocking in the run game, I thought there were some flashes of some positive signs there as well.
Yeah, short yardage was definitely...
Same thing as has been. And the fourth and two, let's start with that one, just because that one stands out in my mind. It's early in the game. You're looking at it. This is the first... you know, goal line type of situation, short yard situation. Now, they're not going to break out some of the plays we've seen in practice because, just like Keeley said, it's being broadcast live. So if they have some stuff that they haven't shown in the past, then they're going to hold on to that and not show it to teams on TV. Just keep that in mind. So if you saw the same play and were like, this is the same thing I saw last year. Well, yeah, because they don't want to show anything new. They don't want to give it away. They want to spring it on a team instead. But
spring it on. I get what you did there.
Ooh.
But fourth and two... the thing that I found interesting is I went back, I watched it three or four or five times, looked at each offensive lineman. No one got beat, but no one got a push. And I think that's going to be the difference in whether this team can take them the offensive line to the next level. You know, even the younger guys were on that. Jay Toya was going up against Gino Quinones, and Jay Toya has been having a monster spring camp. And he won the battle because he didn't get pushed back. But he didn't necessarily, you know, get penetration. The run was just stuffed because there was nowhere to go. Everyone kind of stonewalled, and it was an even match at the line of scrimmage. So that's the next step for the offensive line. I think that's a positive, actually, for them, that there wasn't just a free rusher coming and, you know, the play was, you know, 5 yards in the backfield lost. It was just they got stonewalled at the line of scrimmage. They didn't get a push going forward. So maybe that's a small positive step for the offensive line. But I think that's the next step for them to turn into being a decent offensive line, being a good offensive line, is being able to get a push on those short yardage situations. Now, if you can avoid having the free rusher come and hit your guy, now can you actually get a push and go forward?
Yeah.
One of the things I saw on Tuesday, I did like a report watching the practice on the defensive backs, and they definitely had some issues when the nickel – back would, you know, blitz from the slot. And I think you guys might have mentioned it on Instant Analysis too. We saw, I think Isaiah Polamalu did a nice one, gets a sack there. Just like running free, like nobody's touching them. Someone's got to pick that up. So that was one of the issues too, maybe, you know. But yeah, there was a lot of pressure. And it'll be interesting to see when Shotgun goes back and looks through the tape on that to see, you know, that fourth and two play to see that the guys really didn't get beat. But what you need is a push on those kind of plays. And they had a couple. There was one, I think, when Stephen Carr scored from short yardage. So there was one, at least a successful one. But yeah, for the most part, you're sort of like, yeah, we saw that last year too.
Yeah. But how much do you evaluate, like, okay, is USC's defensive line successful? This is also the ninth practice of spring with a new offensive line coach. How much do you factor all of that in when you are evaluating this offensive line?
I think the biggest factor is just that you don't have the starting unit together. You know, there's a bunch of individual guys. And just for the offensive line, they have to be – it's much more of a cohesive unit. You can put like four or five crazy defenders out there and put them in any order and just like, go get it, you know, go get the ball carrier. And they're like, they can go after it. And even if they're not on the same page, yeah, they might leave a big gap and someone runs through it. But for the most part, you can be disruptive and make plays. It's really hard to get that kind of push with an offensive line where you're not used to playing next to each other. And, you know, having Andrew Voorhees play left tackle, like, that's great. Shotgun said it looked, you know, from the tape, it looked like he did a nice job. But that's a lot. That's a big ask, putting someone out there that, you know, maybe he played there on Thursday. I'm not sure because we don't get to watch a Thursday practice, but he did not play there on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't even seen a different left tackle at first team rather than Quillen Ford.
So yeah.
It's just been different in that sense. I'm going to go into questions just because we have a lot and I don't want to overlap by asking you guys questions that people have already asked. Before we do so, though, we have two callers on the line, so I'm going to go to them first. Let's go to our first caller. Hello, you're live on Tunnel Vision.
Hi.
Hey, what's your question for the team? Sorry, what's your question for the team?
The question for the team is, what is the story on Keenan Christen? Is he still on the roster?
Yeah, he's still there. What we had heard originally was doing track, but we haven't seen him at practice at all. So he's still on the roster, but we haven't seen him out there yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is similar to when Adoree, you know, went and ran track during the spring. And now Adoree did stop by a couple practices. We did see his face occasionally, but he never was practicing with the team in the spring either. We did see Adoree yesterday, which is always a positive thing.
Yes.
He's such a bright light to any situation that he's in. But we haven't seen Keenan Christen around. So that's, you know, it's a little bit of a concern just because we haven't necessarily seen him. And, you know, that starts people going wondering, you know, with the running back depth and, you know, is there questions about, is he going to transfer? But as far as we know, nothing like that. He's just running track right now. We'll see how things continue to progress as the, you know, as the spring ends and then as the summer workouts and stuff go on.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I also don't know how much COVID protocols play into that, Shotgun, as far as seeing him. So yeah. I don't know about that. Sorry,
there could be some COVID protocols, but it's unfortunate because you guys got to watch, you know, Keontae Ingram, and he looks like a starter. Like, he could be the starter. And, you know, I thought Stephen Carr played well, too. But we saw that in practice. It looked, you know, he looked at the part in the game, maybe the most explosive play of the game that he had, and making guys miss. And it looked like he would have scored a touchdown, except Eric Krobokop got in the way. I don't know if you saw that on the tape, too, Shotgun. You know, his own blocker is the one that, like, basically brought him down. But he looks legit. And, you know, when Christen was already like kind of playing third or fourth before, another guy can jump ahead. Brandon Campbell's looked pretty good. So it's great if you're going to run track, but if he had the opportunity to, you know, to play spring football, I don't know, it might have set him back a little bit by not being out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough because you have two new guys come in and they're vying for opportunities. You know, Brandon Campbell has shown some really positive flashes. Graham Harrell, according to the broadcast, Graham Harrell told them that every time he touches the ball, something special could happen. So those are the type of players you go, okay, we got to find a way to get them in the game. And that's the same thing with Keenan Christen. He's so fast. If you can get him a little crease, he can turn a 4-yard run into a 40-yard run with a quickness. So, you know, you've got to still be out there to earn those opportunities, though. So I think that it's not advantageous for him not to be here in the spring when there's two new guys coming in that are vying for those chances, too. And Ingram looked really good. Now, both those guys on the ground didn't really do too much. I mean, 13 carries for 39 yards combined for Ingram and Campbell. You know, they were playing with the other offensive line. I can't even call them the second offensive line. I would say the second best offensive line when they were in the game with Mohassan and Miller Moss as well. So on the Cardinal team, the gold team, I don't remember which one it was. Yeah. I wish they'd have given them separate names. Maybe I would have had a better chance. But no, they didn't really run the ball well between the tackles there. They didn't get a ton of big carries or anything. But Ingram has the big catch. And he made like six dudes miss on the play.
Not even miss. He like pushed him down. He was like, nope.
I mean, he stiff-armed Raymond Scott. He went right by Chris Steele. He went up the sideline and beat Britton Allen, I think. He made a lunging and tackle attempt. Couldn't get there. Zamarin Gordon couldn't get there. He breaks the ankles off his former Texas teammate, Xavier Alford, cutting back inside. And like Ryan said, the only guy that could really take him down was Eric Krominook. Now, I don't blame Eric Krominook on this. Yeah. because he's 45 yards downfield trying to help block. So yeah. I give him a ton of credit, actually, for being down there and making that effort. But as Ingram was trying to cut back, you know, he ran into Kromanuk there, and that's when the defense was finally able to tackle him. But a 49-yard play, explosive play by just checking the ball down.
Yeah.
This was, if you remember, this was the drive that started terribly. USC, yes. The offense had two consecutive penalties. It was first and 25. I think they ran the ball once, and then Ingram gets his big play.
Yeah.
One play later, they throw it to Brew McCoy for a touchdown. So you go from first and 25, drive pretty much can be over, to touchdown three plays later.
Yeah, it was like second and 20-something, right? Like it still was.
Second, yeah, second like 23, probably.
It makes me wonder what would have happened in a live situation, because the defender coming at whoever the quarterback was, I'm forgetting right now, was very close. It was it was a quick dump-off. So I'm not sure, but it was still a nice play nonetheless. So we'll see. Go check out my highlights. I have a great view of that, so be sure to do that. Let's go to our second caller of the night. Hello, you are live on Tunnel Vision.
Hello, gang. Nice to talk to you again. This is Gilbert from Sherman Oaks.
What's up, Gilbert?
And first of all, my condolences to the entire Brown family, and in fact, the entire Trojan family. Tragic loss.
Yeah.
Moving on, I was at the spring game yesterday, my daughter in the group. Yes, Ryan, I agree with you. It was finally kind of a spring game, and I really enjoyed it.
Good.
All right. The top question was, I stayed for the whole thing, and if somebody can shed light on who number 34 running back is, I think it's Colombo. I don't know where he come from. I don't know if he's a walk-on or what he is, but he looked terrific. He reminded me of the guy that I supported for a couple of years, Marquis Stepp. This guy looks for real. Anyway, secondarily, I was part of the group that was chanting Spencer Gilbert, and we did get a reaction. I didn't know if it was heard up in the press box. And that same group, believe it or not, started chanting Carol Folt. She was down there with her baseball cap and whatever. And she actually turned around and acknowledged the group. Well, I thought that was pretty good. Thanks. Last question, and I guess this should go to Mr. Shotgun, is do we know anything about the circumstances of CJ, I think his name is Taylor. Anyway, the basketball player that decommitted, Allen, decommitted from USC to Texas Tech. And with that, I'll sit and listen to your responses.
Thank you. Thanks. For the call. Yeah.
I don't remember what the first question was now. It was too long.
Start with Matt Colombo. I don't know that he really fits the void of Marquis Stepp. I mean, he's listed at 185 pounds at 5'11", not quite the 230 or so that Marquis Stepp was. His background is he's from St. John Bosco, played on some of those terrific teams along with Braylon Goforth and Chris Steele, yeah, and a number of those Bosco players that are on USC's team. Here's a list of it. Jude Wolfe, Spencer Gilbert, Will Rose, Kobe Pepe, Danny Lockhart Jr., and Max Gibbs, who will be coming in the fall. All those guys, St. John Bosco guys. So he's from a really good high school program. He's a quality guy to have as an extra walk-on. And maybe he'll vie for an opportunity on special teams and stuff. That'll be a question, but he's not going to get any carries in an actual game. He's sixth on the depth chart at best, you know, because you have the four scholarship guys. You have Quincy Junty, who's also in scholarships, so technically five scholarship guys, the former walk-on. So Colombo is down the list a little bit there, but he did look good in this game. You know, he had some opportunities and made the most of them, and he carried for seven times for 47 yards. Had actually the best average overall for any running back at 6.7. So, yeah, give him credit where credit is due, and you know, he had a really nice day. But on to move forward to the KJ Allen, the power forward. You may have seen him on Last Chance U this season. He decommitted. Now, I asked, you know, a team source about him a couple weeks ago, you know, what was the status of him, and said everything looked fine. They were just, you know, waiting for him to get his grades taken care of to be able to come, to get his finish off his degree and be able to join the team. So I think they were a little bit surprised by that. I haven't got an official word from anyone about that, but it, from signs that from people I've talked to, that it seemed like they were expecting him to arrive on campus and be ready to go for next year's team. So now they have an extra scholarship available. We'll see what they do with it, whether they try to go look for another forward or if they look for a point guard or a scoring guard. They still have two scholarships open right now. And then depending on Isaiah Mobley's status, they could potentially end up with a third as well.
All righty. Thank you for the call. We love talking to you guys. Let's jump into questions. First off, it's from Mike on Facebook, who says, which new player will play the most in the fall? For the sake of this question, I'm going to label new as transfer and incoming freshman.
Yeah, to me, this is Keontae Ingram. I think he's going to end up being the starter. Crazy. Ooh. Yeah, that's going out on the limb saying he's going to be starting running back.
You heard it here first.
Who is going to play the most? Is that the question?
Which new player will play the most?
So that brings in the participation charts.
Oh.
And running backs don't ever play the most. You know, they're not playing every snap.
Going so technical.
So Xavien Alford ends up playing the most because safeties don't come off the field, basically, and I think he can win one of those starting spots as well.
Hmm. That's fair. I think starting running back will trump it, though. So
I answered the question, Ryan. Semantics are important.
I'm required to say welcome to the Family Feud podcast, because that's a shotgun's line.
Nice.
Let's jump into YouTube questions. Rick said, if Jaxson Dart starts to outshine Keaton Slovis, could he take over the starting quarterback position?
How do we know this was coming?
In theory, yes. In reality, no.
Hells to the no.
No, and part of it is the relationship that Keaton Slovis and Graham Harrell had built. I mean, Graham Harrell talked about when he was asked about staying instead of, you know, he was offered some other offers. He said, well, I really like it here. And basically, Keaton Slovis has a chance to win the Heisman. That looked great on my resume. So, you know, he's put his chips in the Keaton Slovis pot. And I think that's where he's going to stay. So I think it would take someone overruling him. Now, would Clay Helton do that? Or would he leave it up to his offense coordinator to pick the quarterback? That'd be hard to say. And just because you saw some positive things from Jaxson Dart doesn't mean he has a lot of stuff to work on. He's still a true freshman. He's going to make some wild plays, but there's still things that you got to work on. You can't throw the ball right to the linebacker or to Joshua Jackson, who was at a linebacker depth.
This is an early outbreak of the backup quarterback itis, where that happens all the time. Like, we see this so much, you know, with so many times throughout history.
Yes.
The most popular dude on the team is the backup quarterback. We don't even know if he's going to be the backup quarterback. Like, Miller-Moss might be just, you know, all the other stuff, the quarterback room. Like, did we see Keaton Slovis, like, look amazing when he was named the number two guy? But, you know, Graham Harrell saw some stuff. If he sees some stuff in Miller-Moss or, if, you know, Mo Hassan or whatever. And, I mean, Jaxson Dart could be fourth on the depth chart. We don't know. But to go, oh, yeah, he's going to, like, beat out Keaton Slovis, like, no.
Did I not call this, Ryan?
Yes.
I called this.
Yes.
So
there's a similar question. Eddie asks, how funny is it going to be when the guy USC fans hated, JT Daniels, wins the Heisman, and the guy they loved, Jack Sears, is third string at Boise State? And I think that's the backup QB-itis there. It's like, Jack Sears, why is he not in there? He's got running abilities.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been able to break the into the starter's role at Boise State outside of, I believe, one start last year when their quarterback was down with an injury. So, you know, wishing him the best up there at Boise State, and hopefully he can this year. But I think that shows you that people really jump on that backup QB bandwagon when things aren't going great. Now, we'll see where USC is at in the fall and how the offense looks then as to whether anybody wants to complain about the starting quarterback or not.
I feel really bad for JT Daniels because I just feel like he just got a bad rap the whole time. I think we were all pretty steady. We're like, hey, he's good. He played in the gumbo, which was terrible.
Yeah.
And there was sort of like the you know, maybe the Clay Helton stink a little bit that got on him, and people were like, oh, he's a Clay Helton guy or something. You know, we don't like him. And now that he's
the scapegoat, because you go from 2017 with Sam Darnold, you go to the Pac-12 championship, you go to JT Daniels 2018, and you go 5-7. Everyone put it on JT, and that's when we were like, okay, calm down a little
bit. Yeah, slow your roll, whatever. But And now that he's gone, they're like, see, we told you. They're like, no, you hated him before. Yeah. Like, I don't understand.
We remember these things, yes. People. We have a question on Facebook from Bert who said, not sure if you hit on this yet, but with the line being split up, should we really be worried about the offensive line? Or did USC not get a good look on Saturday? Or did USC not look good on Saturday? Excuse me.
I'm not as concerned after rewatching the broadcast and seeing, you know, some of the starters, you know, looking at them, they were making their blocks. There's still some issues, definitely going to be some issues. And I think I think there's some positive signs that I took away from it too on rewatching it. So not as concerned as I was before, because looking at where a lot of the pressures came from, it was guys that are second string or third string guys.
Ryan, any thoughts?
Yeah. I really do think the biggest factor was you didn't have those groups playing together. I mean, I think there was concern about the offensive line going into the spring last season. While we're watching spring football, after the spring game, there's going to be concern going forward. What level? I think they have to figure out who that top five is and then see how they play together. It could be very different than what we saw the first few weeks. And it doesn't really matter right now. They want to get that group ready by, you know, whoever it is by the end of spring. And then they can work throughout the offseason together and then going into fall camp and really do their best. You know, they got talented running backs. You got a great quarterback. If you can protect him and open up some holes, push some people around when it's third and one, yeah, you can do some great things.
I don't know why Chuck is laughing.
Sorry, I just saw a question, upcoming question. I apologize.
That's okay.
I got ahead of myself there as I'm adding the questions to our doc for Keeley. AKA Boone asked, Shotgun, is it too early for the Devin Brown starting QB debate? No, we need to start that one and the potential Malachi Nelson starting QB debate.
2023
recruit who's not even committed to USC.
Yeah, exactly.
So might as well start it now.
AKA Boone, you get a new reward. First to make Shotgun laugh while putting the questions in. We got a question from JEC who said, Lake McCree had a pretty nice, fully extended catch on a pretty hard thrown ball. Does he have a realistic shot at playing time this year?
How much do they play the tight end guys? I don't know. I mean, right now they're playing because there's not as many receivers. We don't know. I mean, we got to see what they're going to play. You know, but he looks like he can play.
A lot of two tight end sets yesterday, a lot of two running back sets, and that is, again, limited numbers on the wide receiver, at least scholarship wide receiver depth chart, and then Garrett Bryant Jr. leaving with a hamstring injury made it even a lighter depth chart there. So, you know, that'll be a big question. How much playing time do the tight ends earn in the fall will be determined then. But Lake McCree, it will depend. He has a legit shot, but it will depend on what the coaches are looking for. Because right now, he's a receiving tight end. He's still got a lot of work to do on the blocking end. I think the same thing's going to happen when Michael Trigg gets in.
Yep.
He's a jumbo wide receiver. They're gonna need a little bit of time as true freshmen coming in. Same thing anytime you have a true freshman offensive lineman coming in. So they got a little bit of time to be able to catch up to the speed of the college game to be able to block at that level. So I think that's something, if they need a guy out there that they're going to split out, then maybe McCree becomes an option. Now we didn't see Ethan Ray yesterday, so that made even more opportunities for McCree to come in and get some opportunities. Josh Follow did return, which is a very positive sign after the injury we saw early in camp and, you know, looked pretty serious. Thankfully it wasn't. So, you know, can he beat out Josh Follow as the receiving option? That would be, you know, he would have to do that first, and then Trigg coming in as well, I think, is going to be a beast trying to catch, you know, beast catching the ball and trying to beat him out. So I think if they're looking for just a receiving tight end, then he's got a good opportunity. But if they want the guy that can be out there and block as well, he's got to make up some ground there.
We got a Twitter live question from Len DJ. This is for all of you. How would you rate the overall take on the team after the spring game? So, like, how do you rate? I think it's hard to do.
I mean, it's the middle of the spring camp.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can take away too much. I think you can be encouraged by what you saw on the defensive side of the ball, especially the defensive line. I just think I've said it multiple times, but I just think the defensive line is really intriguing because it's just a cast of characters who I think Vic Soto is getting a lot out of that group. And so they are performing well so far.
I think you're going to see the defense play a little bit better than last year. And I think the offense is still sort of up in the air. You lose a couple of huge targets. I think the running back group will be even a little better than it was last year. The offensive line is still going to be the big question. That could be the wrench in the works there.
Yeah. But I think it's too early to judge the offensive line. I know we've said it multiple times in the show, but I think that's the case.
I think special teams will be a little better too. They only fair caught balls yesterday, but I feel like they're gonna. It's gonna be a good special teams year. Just hiring a good special teams coach matters, and they did that.
Mm-hmm. Shoddy, any thoughts?
I think it's always way too soon to judge a team based off a spring game.
Yeah,
I mean, one, injuries play into it. Who's not available? Who is available? That's when you see guys. You've seen some standouts at the spring game and you go, wow, maybe that guy will get some opportunities. And then they never get an opportunity to jump up and be in the mix. You got to take advantage of the opportunities you get in the spring when guys are down. But then when those starters come back, it makes it that much more difficult for certain guys to jump up and earn playing time. So that's why, you know, a lot of times it can be the matchup, who's winning those matchups, and that's what I'm kind of talking about with the offensive line. A lot of times there were matchups where, you know, starting defensive lineman versus a second or third string, a green offensive lineman, then the starting defensive lineman is usually going to win that battle. So I think that was a little bit of the case yesterday, not the whole case for sure. I think the defensive line has been very positive, you know, has made a ton of strides from where we saw them a year and a half ago to now. And a lot of guys are making plays. So I think they're a group that continues to catch our eye. And so you take away the positives from it and say, okay, let me keep an eye on these type of things rather than saying that's set in stone. That guy looked great. And that's where it's going to be going forward. No, I think you take a look at it and you say, Andrew Voorhees looked positive. Let's see where it goes from here the next couple weeks of spring camp. But you got to get into fall camp when you're actually running your real game stuff. You're, you know, working on stuff for other teams. And then you see what another team throws at you eventually, too.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of broad takes, we got a question from Mark Watkins who said, how concerned should USC fans be about the safety position other than Anthony Beavers, who was good with the exception of that one play? The safety play as a whole was really bad on Saturday, he says.
I didn't think it was really bad. I'd have to go back and watch again, but you know, I think Isaiah Polamau is, you know, you're going to like him. He's going to play nickel a lot of times, but I wouldn't agree with that. Shotgun, do you think the safety play was bad? I don't think it was.
I mean, I think the safety play is in flux right now, and part of that is with IPM playing that nickel position. Is that where he's going to be in the future? Is Chase Williams, is he more suited for that? Do you move him down? I thought Britton Allen had a few nice plays in the game at the, you know, coming off the nickel spot. You know, they were able to create pressure off the edge from the nickel spot multiple times. So that's the safeties. You know, over the top, they got beat once, and that was the throw over the middle to Drake London. The rest of the time, it was usually just a cornerback one-on-one, so I don't really blame the safeties anywhere there. So I, you know, when you're not getting beat over the top, then that's usually how you measure up the safeties and do they come down and make tackles in the box. And I thought they did that as well today. There weren't a ton of big plays in this game, and usually that's a way to kind of measure the safeties. Big plays on offense a lot of times come back to where your over-the-top defenders are. And the safeties, you know, we're in the right place to not give up those really big plays, I think. Mm-hmm.
We got a question on Facebook from Chuck who says, is there a way to watch SC games when they are on the Pac-12 network when you have DirecTV?
No. Sean actually on Facebook said, try a 2-week trial on Sling. Depending on if it's worth it, you can just get a small subscription for the games on the Pac-12 network. So, yeah, you basically need another streaming service. I've done Sling before. I don't have it right now. I probably should get it again. I don't get to watch all my spring games from the Pac-12, which is troublesome. But yeah, it's a pain. I'm sorry if you have DirecTV. There's no connection to the Pac-12 network. Hopeful, you know, with a new commissioner coming in, they have to revamp the Pac-12 network. My guess is they're going to get rid of the regional, networks because they have 7 of them right now. And but get Sling, something like that. I think Sling might be the cheapest way if you just want the Pac-12 network. And you can get Sling TV, which is just a streaming service.
Potentially even easier than that is just waiting until they get a new Pac-12 commissioner, and then hopefully they get on DirecTV.
Yeah, I'm sort of waiting for that right now. I'm like, you know, they're going to fix this at some point. I'm like, I don't want to sign up for
Sling
again.
Put in a lot of faith in the Pac-12, Ryan.
It's so dumb. I have a streaming service. I have YouTube TV. Like, why isn't it on the streaming services? You know, like, it's just, there's so many things that are wrong with that.
Sanchise11 on YouTube says, where do Solomon Tuilalupu and Jordan Iosefa fit when they come back? Do Kanai Mauga and Raylan Goforth ride the bench if they do come back?
I don't think there's bench ride. There'll probably be some rotation and stuff for sure. But you would like to have a little more depth there. And a guy like Solomon Tuilalupu, man, you talk to you know, you still talk to people that watch him in high school, like, oh my God, he was amazing. It's like, yeah, we haven't seen him. We've seen him like one practice or something at USC. And, you know, we've seen ISF, unfortunately, he's just been banged up for the last, what, 2 years or something. Yeah. But yeah, I think they're all going to be able to play. You just need some more depth there.
Yeah, and also worth remembering that riding the bench is a little dramatic just because at least Kanai and Goforth have played games in Todd Orlando's system, whereas Jordan Iosefa and Solomon haven't. So it's different. They'll have to get back to time and rehab and whatnot. So
yeah, there'll be an acclimation period, just kind of learning the system. But we saw the linebackers get better, like the whole defense basically, as you learn things. But and again, just like Keaton Kristen missing some time, those guys missing some time, you get more, you know, this is when Todd Orlando wanted to build that culture of toughness and all that. And these guys are having the opportunity. So it's going to be a little tougher to, you know, take their spots. But, you know, they're very talented guys, so they'll have that opportunity. It's just you don't have, you know, you're missing out on some great reps and great opportunities to kind of bond and impress the coaches, all the new coaches on the defensive side.
Mm-hmm. We got multiple questions about Josh Jackson, so I'm going to ask both of them. Mark Watkins says, did Jay Toya and Josh Jackson have legit shots to start this season? Both were impressive. And then AKA Boone says, is Josh Jackson a dude, all caps, or just a dude, lowercase, because the limited numbers, question mark.
Ryan, you want to shout at it? Or?
I'm sorry, I was putting a question in there. You go first.
Josh Jackson, I think, has an opportunity to be a starter. I don't know that he's a dude yet. Well, let's calm down on that. It takes a lot for me to give out that phrase. That's NFL first, second round guy. That's who I consider dudes. So I don't think he's at that level. He has a chance to be in that competition, though. I mean, he's made a lot of plays. He's shown that he's willing to come up and tackle, which you need from your cornerbacks. And, you know, he's shown that he's fearless and going out there. Now, he also got juked out of his shoes once by Mike Jack on a play on the sideline. He got beat for, I think, a long catch up the sideline as well. So he's just growing pains, you know, that's what you expect out of a first year player. And that's what he is. He's a first year cornerback right now. So, but he's shown a lot of flashes, which is a really positive sign. And I'm also curious to see when they get the two young guys on campus in the summer and the fall, when you get Prophet Brown, you get Sierra Wright, how much more competition is there at the cornerback position? Or does it become a point where you feel like Chris Steele is head and shoulders above with, and I'll leave it blank, is that Isaac Taylor Stewart? Is that Jaden Williams, who's looked really good at times this spring as well? Is that someone like Joshua Jackson? I think Chris Steele is probably going to be a starter the entire time. Now, who else is going to be the other starter? Isaac Taylor Stewart, we've seen flashes. Can we get that consistency? He gave up the touchdown to Brew McCoy in the game. So, you know, you're looking for you got to eliminate those type of plays. That might have been a little bit on the safety, though. You know, I had to rewatch that one a little bit. I think that was may have been a trail play where the safety should have been over the top. So maybe the safeties didn't make as many plays as I thought.
I'm going to go, I'm going to lower my standard for calling Josh Jackson a dude. I'm going to call him a dude. I'm like, I think he is, just because he just switched. And he's already looks like he belongs there, like he could be competing for a starting spot. So I would say he's ahead of schedule for someone that just switched positions. He's made plays on the ball. He's picked off multiple passes. I think he's looked legit, you know. So it's I think he if you were like last year, like, oh, you're going to switch Joshua Jackson over to corner. Like, all right, yeah, he'll be 15th on the depth chart or something. Like, no, he's up there. So, you know, is he a dude for second round draft pick like Shotgun saying? You know, maybe at some point, but not there yet. But just what he's done so far, switching over, I'm going to give him some dude status.
Sure. And like Shotgun mentioned, it's with the fact that USC barely has any scholarship quarterbacks on the depth chart right now, and that Jaden Williams did not play on Saturday. Maybe he would have got lost in the depth chart if there wasn't such few numbers, but now he's getting time. So
yeah, and making the most of that opportunity.
And then the other guy that was mentioned, Jay Toya, yes, he has an opportunity to start. And part of that is because of the injuries. Brandon Peely is...
Yeah, we got a question from Jasper Smith. Sorry, Shotgun. About with Peely out for the season, he had an Achilles tendon. Who takes his reps? Let's take it away, Shotgun. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so Clay Helton confirmed what we had reported in the war room previously, that Brandon Peely had surgery on his Achilles, and they're hoping that, you know, everything went well as far as we know, and we're hoping that, you know, he'll make a full recovery and be back as quickly as he can, but he's done for the season. So Ishmael Sofscher has not practiced at all. He had the compartment leg syndrome. He's not getting an opportunity to prove himself, learn this new defense until the summer at the earliest, and then, you know, the fall when he put the pads on. So Jay Toya's in there. Jay Toya's taking reps. Jay Toya's being a beast right now. And he is a mountain of a man, as Clay Helton said. He has been running through people consistently. He throws offensive linemen, both the first string guys and the second string guys, out of the way at times, and has been able to be disruptive both in the run game and just creating some extra pressure on the quarterbacks. He isn't getting there and making a ton of sacks, but he's being that second guy, and that's usually what you need to get a sack. You need two guys to get pressure, not just one, because oftentimes a quarterback can roll away from one guy.
Mm-hmm. Now he's going to be a legit player, so for sure a couple of guys that...
Now he's edging on dude status.
Getting there, like a Thule. Thule's total dude right now.
Yeah, I would say so. Do you not agree with that, Chuggin?
I don't know that he's a first or second round pick yet. No,
that's your definition.
That's my definition. Dude. Yeah.
Okay.
But I just watching Thule Tupelotu play. I think he's a dude.
Dude.
Yeah.
We got a question from Mike on Facebook who says, "What do you think about ESPN's top 25 rankings?" Pretty broad question, Mike. But the boss man put it up.
So I said, I don't know. Was there some like too early? You know. College football rankings or something, like maybe a little more specific, but
probably
the rankings don't mean diddly do in like the fall. They certainly don't mean anything in April.
Also,
I mean, they mean something in the fall, later in the fall, but
I mean, like August, like when they're like the preseason, you know, like the but the way too early, said, yeah, the way too early ones, no, those don't mean anything either. Like until like the season's going, like I don't like
who that's cares still the fall.
The preseason doesn't matter, like the rankings don't matter. Certainly, April rankings don't matter.
We got a question from Daniel on YouTube that says, the biggest, all caps, question of all, can SC hang with Notre Dame and can SC beat Oregon with what you see? Reminder, it's 9 practices of spring.
Yeah. I mean, yes, USC can. I mean, because they're a talented team. But, like, going into the season, am I going to say that USC, would I predict USC to beat Notre Dame on the road? No. You know, maybe after the first few games, like, wow, this team does really look good. The offensive line is gelling. If all that stuff happens, like, oh, yeah, okay. But right now, I mean, Notre Dame would probably be a favorite. And I would, you know, early, I would probably pick Notre Dame. But, yeah, certainly USC can beat those teams.
Ryan? I mean, Shotgun?
That was me.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds great. Andrew on Facebook.
Neither one of those teams is like some upper echelon team. They're not Alabama.
Notre Dame was in the playoff.
Hang with them.
Oregon won the Rose Bowl.
Hang with them.
Or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, we've seen USC hang with Notre Dame at South Bend, but.
Won the Rose Bowl 2 years ago, but yeah.
We have a question from
Andrew. Can they hang with them, Ryan, though? Can they hang with them?
Sure, they can hang.
Yeah. Okay, then. That's my answer.
Okay. Yeah. Getting chippy over here. Andrew on YouTube says, is the offensive line not getting a push more indicative, wow, hello, of the new air raid offensive line coach, or the defensive players are just better?
I think it's indicative of the offensive line play the last few years rather than the new offensive line coach. I mean, he's had 3 weeks to work with them. They haven't really gotten a push consistently in, what, half a decade?
It's been a while. Yeah, I think, I mean, you're changing offensive line coaches. That usually takes a little while. USC went a run of like 5 years with 5 different coaches. They had a pretty bad one for a while that they stuck around probably too long. They bring in Tim Drebno for a couple years, and his system really didn't match what was going on, you know, with the offensive coordinator. Now you have systems that match, but you're sort of like already behind. It's not you don't hire a new guy and instantly catch up. It's really hard to tell. Like, will Clay McGuire be good or bad? Like, I think it's way too early to say. But even if he was great, I don't think you were going to see huge results right away, like in 9 practices in.
Oh, we're reaching the top of the hour, so be sure to get your rapid-fire questions. And I'm also going to go through these rapid-fire. So, gentlemen, keep your answers rapid-fire, a.k.a. Shotgun Smartling. We had a question from Torian who said, will Kyle Ford have an impact this season?
Yeah, I think I already predicted he was going to start. So, yeah, I just like Kyle Ford a lot. So, I think they are going to rotate a little bit more on the receiver spot. I think you're going to see more guys play. Before, you had those established guys. I think it'll be, you got your Drake London, and then I think a bunch of guys will play. I think he'll be one of them.
I'll believe rotation when I see it. We've preached, there's been rotation preached at us multiple years in a row at different positions, and it never seems like those happen. They're mixing and matching on the offensive line. Well, it only took them drafting teams for that to happen.
Oh, we had a question from Centerpoint Media who says, do you think USC needs to upgrade its out-of-conference schedule versus other power conferences? This is related to getting in or being left out of the playoffs.
No.
No.
They play Notre Dame every year. Like, USC, that's the one thing that doesn't happen. USC has plenty of schedule power. And they have the brand. Like, they don't need to do as much.
They played Notre Dame. They've also played, what, in recent years, Texas, Alabama. You know, they played really good teams. And some people go, wow, do you really need to play that many solid teams at a conference when you're going to play Notre Dame every year? And Notre Dame has been a really successful program the last, you know, half decade or so. So, you know, I don't think that that's something that you should worry about at all. You got to worry about winning your conference games to be able to get to that. If they were going undefeated in the conference every year, then maybe you'd worry about the out of conference more.
Yeah, just having that Notre Dame game is a big, you know, that's enough. But USC has, they're going to get the benefit of the doubt. Like, if Oregon State made a run and they were like 11-1 in the Pac-12, they're probably not making it in. USC's 11-1. Unless there's some, you know, four undefeated teams, they're probably making it in.
Brighton on YouTube says, are all the picks thrown Saturday from Keaton and company cause for concern, or is it just them getting the ball forced out of their system? Don't know what that means necessarily. A lot of easy checkdowns missed that would have gone for first downs.
And who wants to check down on a spring game, man? You want to take some shots downfield, right? You know, Slovis's pass was just underthrown. That wasn't a great one. You know, Dart had some great passes, and then that his pick wasn't very good. Moss missed, he had Katie Nixon pretty open. It just looked like there was some miscommunication there on that one. He missed that one, but the other pick wasn't very good either. Kind of just he was pressured and just kind of flicked it up in the air, which was ill-advised because Chris Steele like came down with it. But yeah, I mean, there was some pressure there, but just you're going to get some bad throws and great on the defense to make some plays on him.
I don't think he missed Katie Nixon. I think there was a miscommunication because Chris Steele was trying to run the route for him and was out in front running the post route. And Miller Moss saw a wide open space, and he tried to throw it in that open space, and Katie Nixon wasn't on the same page with him to go do that. If he recognized that space himself, then you know you go throw to run to green grass, throw to green grass, and then he's wide open. That's a 25-yard catch, and then you go on. But Chris Steele was definitely running the route for him, and Moss read it, and Katie Nixon wasn't reading the same thing at the same time on that one. But the interception was not a very good throw from Moss there. And again, a miscommunication with young receivers or with new receivers that he's not used to throwing to. So I give him a little bit less of a negative on his throw on that one for the miscommunication than Jackson Dart just not seeing the underneath defender there on that one. Same thing with Keaton Slovis. I didn't think that was a very good throw. Just not seeing it. It was, you know, a deep drop coverage because it was a third and long situation, and it was, I believe, a cover two, a Tampa two, because you had Tua Sivinamora running deep in the middle, and you know that's one where you got to throw it short, which he did in the next drive to Gary Bryant, throws it about 7-yard pass, and Gary Bryant picks up another 6 yards, and that created a fourth and two out of a third and like 15 or something. So you got to learn from it, and he did on the next drive, but those are the type of throws you can't make in games. So hopefully they get them out of their system in the spring game. But, yeah, you don't want to check down unless, Ryan, you check down to Keontae Ingram and he takes it 49 yards.
There you go. I think we have a picture of that, that Dorian Hewitt interception. But I feel like that's just Keaton Slovis going, hey, you know, I want to find my guy, Drake London. If I just throw it anywhere near him, he's going to catch it, you know, unless there's a dude standing right in front of him and it's underthrown, which that's what happened. Know.
Is that what's going through his head?
Yeah. I think, I mean, would you? Like, you'd be like, hey, what's going on? Oh, there's that London guy. Maybe I'll throw it to him because he's really freaking good. Okay.
Sure, yeah. Oh, we have a question from Dennis on Facebook who said, what about the best spring game, Modern Day versus Bosco? Did you scout the game? In your opinion, how did USC's guys do?
Damani Jackson had an interception. You know, there's a couple of targets in there that looked really good. David Bailey looked good. Rayshon Davis. I had a couple of really nice plays there, so I thought USC's guys and some of the guys that they're looking at looked positive. I didn't really focus on the game. I was in and out of taking a nap after the spring game and editing photos during that game as well. So the bits and pieces of it that I saw, the guys that are committed to come to USC looked pretty good.
Yeah, by the time I turned it on, it was too late, and I was like, oh, man, I missed it. So
I don't get Fox – like, my YouTube TV doesn't get Fox Sports West, I believe.
I hate
no
that.
One gets Fox Sports West anymore because it's not Fox Sports West anymore.
Oh, true.
What is it now?
It's Bally Sports West. Which
is it?
Not, yeah.
Oh, maybe
really
I get
weird.
That. I didn't even see that. I don't
know,
but.
Yeah, all the Fox – Yeah.
To all the digitals. YouTube, any YouTube people out there, let me know if I get it because I didn't see it.
I don't think you do. No, because I would have YouTube TV so I can watch Angels, but I don't. So there you go.
Oh, you can't. Oh, yeah. Another Twitter live one,
sure.
From M. Mosley 30. Is Muneer McClain still suspended?
Yes. Latest we've heard, yes.
Yeah.
Still on the roster.
Still on the roster. We, you know, definitely would have had some opportunities with the numbers you have at wide receiver right now. So it's unfortunate he's not out there, but yeah, still on the roster.
We have a question from Moms on YouTube who says, do you see the offense being more, quote unquote, balanced this season? I put the quotes there because that's a quote from Clay Helton.
No. Of course. I think it's still going to be, I think they're still going to be throwing football a lot more than they're running it. But what was the ratio last year, Shaka? Like,
oh, I don't know off the top of my head.
At the end of the day, like sometimes there's going to be some blowouts and they're just running the football at the end. So I think the numbers will get skewed a little bit. But like if you did like a real game time stuff, I still think it's going to be more on the passing side than what they've said. That's just my guess.
We had a question from hip hop lover John who says, what's USC's biggest strength overall, wideout or the defensive line?
Defensive line because there's more bodies.
Yeah. I mean, there's some studs on the wideout spot. I mean, to see Brew McCoy back in pads for the first time, making a play, like his first touch, you know, it's like, oh, touchdown. That's not bad. Yeah. So that's cool. I mean, I think Kyle Ford's going to be really good. We saw flashes Michael Jackson, all those guys. Yeah. But I mean, we're seeing guys that were like, oh, maybe like a 3-star guy coming out of high school and then looks, you know, really good on the defensive side. That's the kind of development you want. You want to take guys that have like maybe they were 3-star with high potential and then turn them into guys that look like blue chippers. And I think Vic Soleto has been doing a pretty good job of that.
Deontay Burnett style, if it was a wide receiver.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember watching Deontay Burnett at like Sarah practice. We were filming because like five other guys and I'm watching him like, and I think it was with Gerard and like Greg Biggins. I'm like, who the hell is that? They're like, oh, he's going to Washington State. I'm like, that guy's good, you know, and it was pretty funny. Like one practice, you're like, yeah, he's legit. And then USC flips him at the end.
We have a question from Racer on YouTube that says, when Isaac Taylor Stewart was in high school, was he considered one of the fastest? He was considered one of the fastest kids out there. Has he regained that speed coming back from injury?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen him lose the speed necessarily.
Yeah.
But as a cornerback, it's not about straight ahead speed. It's about what you can do in your back pedal.
Yeah, you're going backwards quite a bit. And we don't really get to watch these guys race all the time. So it's some people are like,
hey,
who's
best? That's what PRPs are for. That was the fun part.
Yeah, we could see some of that. Like, you see, like, one-on-ones and stuff, which we can't do anymore. But mm-hmm. I know. We should have them all race and see, like, who's fastest.
we have some authority over this.
Yeah, yeah. I'll make some calls. Hey, Robert Steiner, can we come out and watch some races?
Bobby Steiner and the boys. Gary on Facebook said, I heard Corey Foreman was at the spring game. Any other signees or recruits in attendance? Yes, there were.
There were some.
I believe Fabian Ross was there. Shoddy?
Yeah, the cornerback commit from Las Vegas, Bishop Gorman, for the 2022 class. I'm still getting used to saying that now that we moved on to that.
Crazy, right?
I believe Malachi Nelson was also there, the 2023 quarterback, who's going to be one of the best quarterbacks in the nation probably in that class. So obviously a local kid, one that they want to lock up. They got him and Makai Lemon. Keely and I went and saw them a couple weeks ago, and they put up like 50 points in the first half. They're really, really good.
Really, really good. We had a question from Neil on Facebook. What's the status of Frank Martin?
Frank Martin, we've seen him at practice. I was looking, and in the first half, I don't think I saw him in the game. I'm going to have to look back through my photos to see if he was on the sideline at all, if I saw him anywhere, but didn't see him out there. So Kind of a question mark there. I think there was a question about if Bernard Schirmer is still on the team. He's still on the roster, though he has not returned to be with the team at all after opting out of last season. So question marks there.
Yeah, so we who else opted out? So we had Frank Martin, Jacob Lichtenstein.
And Schirmer.
Came back. And Sherman, yeah. So Schirmer. Yeah.
And Lichtenstein came back at the end of the season, and we saw Frank Martin at practice. Schirmer has not, has not rejoined the team as far as we know.
A Gorilla says, any potential first-round picks from the 2020 class?
I think he's referring to the recruiting class that included the six offensive linemen. Mm. Gary Bryant's the biggest name of that group. Is he a first-round pick? once he stays healthy for long enough, then maybe I can give you a better assessment of that. But with the injury history and small receivers just don't generally go in the first round like that, I would say no there. Are any of those offensive linemen first round picks? You know, maybe Casey Collier or Cortland Ford or Jonah Monheim have a, you know, a future. I think Casey Collier is a guy that has a ton of upside, ton of potential. Obviously, he's got good genetics. We just saw his sister go number one in the WNBA draft. But, you know, he moves really well, and I've seen some positive things from him, but he's still raw. Cortland Ford, you know, it's similar. You know, those three guys are raw. Monheim, I still don't see as a tackle. I think he can be a mauler inside if they give him that opportunity. So it'll be depending on how the offensive line production, how it continues to improve and progress under Clay McGuire.
Yeah, I think that's your best shot as one of those offensive linemen, you know, one of the tackles just starts for 3 years or something and ends up being a first-round pick. But, I think you can get a couple good players out of there. I'm not sure. I haven't really seen first-round talent yet, but, you know, who knows? They could develop that and become one.
I mean, Collier's size and length is the guy that gives me that says he's got the most potential to get there, but he's got a long way to go.
Yeah.
A.K. Boone says, I'm sure everyone else was thinking this. How'd the punters and kickers look? Well, A.K. Boone, multiple people asked about Ben Griffiths. So, yes, report on that, Shoddy.
Ben Griffiths had a 52-yard punt. He had a 40-something-yard punt. But there's no rush coming, so it doesn't really count to me.
Everything was fair.
Alex Stathouse, I think, made all his kicks, made a couple of field goals. So positive there, but Parker Lewis wasn't there. So that's who's going to be starting for you. They kicked off and kicked most of them near the goal line.
Yeah, Parker Lewis, we found out, had some family thing, and he wasn't gone for a week, but the fact that he left and then came back, you have to quarantine for 7 days. So that's why we didn't know why he wasn't at practice the past week, but it's just he had to go for something for his family. But then when you come back, you can't just come back right away. So. Yeah.
Jester Smith says, would you say Chris Steele has gotten his confidence back and remedied his grabbing and holding?
I mean, that's the thing that's going to be something that he has to work on constantly. That's, you know, that he's used to being a physical defensive back, get his hands on him. That's kind of the case with all Southern California. That's kind of the reputation they have. Defensive backs is they want to grab and hold. It comes from the 7-on-7 circuit, and if it's not being called consistently, and they get away with it, and being big and physical, that's one of his better traits, then yeah, that's what he needs to do at the line of scrimmage. Then he has to do a better job of not doing it down the field. I mean, he looked really good in the little bit of time. Besides that one tackle attempt on Keyonte Ingram, he looked good in the, you know, his coverage and stuff on Saturday. He looked good on the last Tuesday when we saw him get the pick to end practice. You know, he had a bounce back day there from his first padded practice. So he's only had three padded practices this spring, so I think he's taking some steps. And I think working with Dante Williams, I think he's only going to continue to progress.
David on YouTube says, from what you've heard and seen, who is the number two quarterback in your eyes at this point of camp?
Way too early to tell.
I mean, if he wasn't injured, Mo Hassan, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so, too.
I mean, experience, plus he's made some really nice throws, and you saw what he did on the one drive that he had, the check down, gets it, you know, doesn't do what some of the other quarterbacks did and takes the check down, works out really well for him, gets out of a first and 25 situation. And then the next throw, he puts it in the, drops it in the bucket, you know, the window between the safety and the cornerback. Perfect throw to Brew McCoy, who does a nice job of stemming the DB, slowing down and then speeding back up to catch the pass. But, you know, that's the type of throws that we've been seeing from Mo Hassan. But unfortunately, he goes down with a knee injury. We don't get to see him the rest of the spring game. He doesn't kind of get to continue to make his case for it.
Alrighty, final question comes from Andrew. It's for you, Ryan. I'm directing it to you.
Okay.
Who is the best SC player that signed that helmet?
Oh, man. that's a, like so many good ones.
I feel like you're going to insult so many people, so maybe don't even answer that.
Right. I mean, there's Hall of Famers all over it. I'm looking right at Anthony Munoz, and like, you know, as far as like overall football player, if you're talking about SC career, he, you know, he had some injuries and stuff, but I mean, he's one of the best to ever do it. So I'll go with Anthony Munoz.
There you go. Shoddy?
A couple of quick things. Center Point said, going back to the question about non-conference schedule, said they were undefeated going to the Pac-12 championship. No one was talking about them getting into the playoff. Don't even take last year. Don't even count that. Yeah, they played five games, so of course they weren't being considered when everyone else was playing a full schedule. So that's much different.
Played months earlier.
Yeah. And then Andrew answered the question for us that USC was 60.34% pass last season with 39.66% run. I think that USC will be more balanced this year because I think the run game will improve, and that'll give Graham Harrell something to actually consider using instead of just being like, we ain't got a run game, we're not even going to try to use it.
Yeah.
A lot of fake quotes in tonight's Tunnel Vision. So,
Keely, there's a Facebook one if you want to put it up real quick.
That always scares me, Ryan.
No, that's
Yeah. Harry says fullback? 4 question marks?
No. 1 for each question mark. No, there's no fullbacks. There's no fullbacks.
No, they'll use the H-back spot, which is where they line the tight end up inside of the tackle. Maybe they explore trying to put somebody else there in that position, but that's the position they're going to use. They're not going to use an actual fullback. You saw some more two-back sets.
Two backs were good.
Where the secondary runner or secondary running back was the lead blocker. Don't know if that's exactly what you want, but, guys like Vi can get out in front and block for you, then that's, what you want. That can work for you then, not necessarily what you want, but you're not going to see a true Soma Vanuku out there anytime soon.
No. Yeah. And Stanley Havili. I don't know if you guys saw it, but, we can't really talk about formation stuff a lot, but this was live on the Pac-12 Network. So, yeah, you saw those guys kind of being a lead blocker at times. We saw it in practice a bunch, but it mostly seemed like they were going out in the flat and catching passes. It wasn't necessarily like a two back and one guy was lead blocking, at least from what I was watching.
We've seen it before, though.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Shoddy, any final thoughts before we wrap it up? Or you, Ryan? No, I guess not.
I think,
rare.
We're all talked out. No, it was positives. I think it was I think it was good to have an actual kind of game. I think they should have been doing this for
You guys were years. Haters, though. I got to call you out on this.
Oh, wait,
you guys,
haters of what?
You were very mad about the fact that the spring game was at this point of spring. And you guys seem like you sound like you've warmed up to the idea.
No, I feel that's still dumb. But I like the fact that it was a spring game. I'm just saying, I don't think I don't like having 2 more weeks of spring football. This would have been great to end it.
I actually do, because I feel like we learn a lot in spring game, and then the Clay Helton presser is just a whirlwind, and then you're like, nope, that's it for the next couple of months. So I like actually having more to watch now.
Practices and stuff. It's just going to be weird. It was good to hear from Clay Helton after the spring game instead of before. Nice. That's part of the weirdness of this COVID stuff, is that we get like a press conference before, and are we going to get an update on some of the injuries? We might not get it till Saturday, unless they tweet something out or send us an email, because I don't think we hear it from Helton until Saturday now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Shotgun and I were sitting in a tunnel on the ground trying to hear Helton while begging the security officer to let us listen to the presser. It's a rough time if you're not in the press box, but we survived. Yeah. Alrighty, that's going to wrap it up for today's Tunnel Vision. That's Ryan. That's Shotgun. I'm Keely. We'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.